This Week on Prepping 2.0.
It brings my self-confidence level up a little bit. I know I'm ready for threats, perceived or not perceived, could be imaginary, but I know I am ready and prepared, and I train my firearm.
When disaster strikes, will you be prepared? This is Prepping 2.0 with authors and prepping experts, Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Online at prepping2-0.com.
Get ready. Prepping 2.0 coming in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher over here at Prepping 2.0, joined by my co-host on the show and co-host in life, Glenn Tate.
Thank you. You know, it's reasonably certain that life in America will involve more criminals running around. Criminals think entirely differently than you or me. And you need to train yourself to think like them in order to avoid being a victim. Our guest is fellow prepper and former NYPD detective Roy. In the after show, he will talk about human trafficking. And as always, remember, the only thing harder than planning for a disaster is explaining why you didn't.
Glenn, let's stop and think about when you left the house this morning. How's my garden going?
Spectacularly well.
So we are in the middle of hot summer. We're about halfway through the growing season. Things are starting to fizzle out. They hit the end of their life, and I now have garden space to put new things in to kind of round out the rest of our growing year. What happens if I go to the garden center and try and buy plants?
There aren't any.
There aren't any. So if I want to grow something, I absolutely have to start it from seed, which I will. Great place for everyone to go check out is Survival Garden Seeds. You can find them at our website, prepping2-0.com. The growing season isn't over, folks. Go over there and click on Friends and Affiliates. You'll find them there. You'll get a coupon code that gets 10% off, and you can keep your garden going until we get to where we can't grow anymore and keep growing your skills.
Top 10 items that disappear first. This is a list from Bosnian survivors. It is available on our website, prepping2-0.com, under, appropriately, the heading, Top 100 List of Things. Number 24, feminine hygiene products. One of the most famous blog posts I ever wrote was entitled, I'm Glenn Tate and I Buy Tampons. And it was all about why, especially men, need to just get it done, take care of this, have a supply of this on hand for the ladies in your lives or possibly visitors that come. This is a very important item for obvious reasons. They go very quickly and it is an incredible comfort, amazing way to reestablish normalcy by having these things. And guys, don't be afraid. I filled up a Walmart shopping cart full of tampons and I did not burst into flames. It's not like, you know, it's not like horrible things will happen to you, and the ladies in your lives will really appreciate it.
So I'm going to add to that.
Because you're a woman.
I'm a woman. Yes, please do
and
that.
And I'm not.
Yes, please do all the things. Yes, that's established that very,
yes,
very
man,
emphatically
woman.
Right
okay.
Now. I encourage folks, what we've done too is go online, go find a vendor. You can find, ladies, the kind of tampons that you get in vending machines where they have kind of the cardboard cover and vacuum seal them.
Yep.
So then you have them like extra preserved, can take a little bit of a beating and be kept in just better condition. So go for that.
Incredibly inexpensive. Here's what you missed from a recent after show if you're not a Patreon. What is it about a red state like Texas that attracts you?
Well, I'm really looking forward to spending a lot of money on an air conditioning bill.
Yes.
What am I expecting to improve? Well, taxation to begin with. Now, Texas doesn't have an income tax, but they make that up in other ways, which are property taxes and through your sales taxes a lot higher in a state like that.
Well, let's get into it. He's a blue state prepper and former NYPD detective. He has a lot of experience to share with you about how to avoid being a victim. Welcome, Roy.
Good afternoon, Glenn and Shelby. How's everybody doing?
Doing great. And we can all tell from your accent that you are indeed a New Yorker. I've had fun with you in the past when you start talking and then I'll say, are you from France? And showing how dumb I am, which is always entertaining. So why don't you tell us who you are and a bit about your background?
All right. First of all, thank you for having me back on the show. It's an absolute pleasure. My name is Roy. I've had 26 years of experience working for the NYPD, from patrolman all the way up to detective, where I was involved in homicides, burglaries, you name it, pretty much every major crime that you can think of. And the same time, I was also a member of the United States Armed Forces before I was in the military. I was in the United States Army where I was a MP. And then after 9/11, I went back into the service with a break in service granted by the New York City Police Department, the police commissioner, where I enlisted in the Air Force and spent 5 years on active duty. And then I continued in the Air National Guard and also retired from that.
Excellent. Well, here's a great question that listeners are wondering. Do criminals think differently than normal people?
Oh, absolutely. Even your most petty criminal, their thinking is, what can they get out of this situation? They're not thinking about their moral compass, if they even have one. They're not thinking about common decency. They are judging you from the minute they look at you on what their possibilities are to get something from you, either be a couple dollars from a panhandler or take it even farther to rob and or mug you. And a lot of it is your body language and how you interact with them. You know, don't become a victim. Just remember, if it's a stranger and you don't know them, especially after an event like a hurricane or a natural disaster, these people are going to come out of the woodworks and prey on law-abiding citizens.
You mentioned body language. Why don't you elaborate on that? Because I find this to be really important. I, in my personal life, have been thrust into situations and I've altered my body language to let folks know, you know, you want some of this? Go ahead, give it a whirl. And it's remarkably effective. So talk about that.
I'll do the best I can with that. My wife always laughs that nobody ever approaches me. I'm not a big guy, average. I'm 5'11", 190 pounds. I'm fit, but I'm not overly muscular. But when we're out in crowds, people step away when I walk through. It's not that I'm mean. It's just that I walk with a sense of purpose. I am not shy. I make direct eye contact. I don't look away. I'm not timid. And panhandlers and your petty criminals see that right away, and they'll be like, we're not going to mess with this guy. If you have somebody that's a little more timid or being friendly or wants to even engage them because they feel sorry for them, they already know they got this person hooked, and they will try to get everything they can out of them. And like I said, it's not always a big crime. It could be something as easy as they want to get a couple dollars from you. They want to pickpocket. They want to steal your phone. I mean, somebody walking down the street with their phone in their hand, looking at the screen, not even looking where they're going. I mean, you're talking snatch and grabs all day long. But then you have somebody like me, and I'm going to assume you too, Glenn, when you're walking down the street, you stop, you look at your phone, but you're always aware of your surroundings. You know, you're not going to blindly walk down the street on social media, you know, with a big sign saying, hey, everybody, look at me, I'm unprepared, come get me. And then there's also the way you stand, you know, are your hands in your pocket? Well, if your hands are in your pocket, they already know right there, this guy's not a threat to me. I could go over, sucker punch him, do whatever I want. It's about being aware of your environment, head on a swivel, and direct eye contact with everybody you meet.
Exactly.
Oh, I have so many questions to ask you. But before I do that, Roy, I want to give a quick shout out to our wonderful sponsors. You can find all of them at our website, prepping2-0.com. Click over on Friends and Affiliates, and over there you will find Pro One water filters. Oh my gosh. Get your water preps in order. Come and Take It Armor, Katie Armor, Backwards Home Magazine, Minutemen Coffee, EMP Shield, Paul Burke, he's an Idaho realtor, specializes in getting prepping properties for first responders. You can find him at First Response Realty, powered by Fathom Realty, Gibbs Arms, and
new folks that we're talking about because he's so cool.
Andy Waits over at podcastaxis.com.
Formerly known as Madge. He is our producer, and we just did an episode, I think it was one of our better episodes.
Yeah.
And he talks about how he can help people who want to start a podcast. And believe me, you're skipping over a lot of steep learning curve stuff by having Andy involved. He can do a consultation that's really cheap, and he can get you started on your podcast. And conceivably, if you want to, you can have him produce it. He's amazing. Podcast Axis, AXIS, Prepping2-Zero.com.
So the comment I wanted to bring to you, Roy, and I wanted to see what your thoughts about this. What you just described is something that both Glenn and I are very familiar with, especially when I lived in Portland, Oregon. I absolutely agree with you. I always had my head on a swivel. I was always looking people in the eye. I always knew who was around me. If I do that now out in the middle of the woods, it's really a waste of energy and time.
But the bears are not impressed.
Yeah, they don't care. Actually, you know, I don't,
you can scare a bear.
The mountain lions are the ones that freak me out, but still do it when I go into the city. But the example I wanted to bring to you, and we learned a lesson from this when Glenn was chemo sick. And when I say that was 2.5 years ago, and it was just that exhausted, gray, extra tired, gray. And like he would maybe go to the grocery store with me once a week just to get out of the house. But it was an exhausting trip. And so when he would walk, he shuffled like an old man.
I was like this old guy in Walmart, only I wasn't old. I was in Walmart, but I wasn't.
And you looked old, though, because you had that sick gray pallor about you. And I remember a friend of ours at the time saw him walking across the parking lot and saw someone you just described seeing that.
Checking me out.
Checking you out and realizing that you were a potential victim of his. And our friend had a serious talk with you about that.
There is no better example of what you're talking about, Roy, than that. The situation I was in where, and I'm 6'2", 250 pounds. I walk with confidence, not like some crazy cartoonish badass kind of thing, which is an important point to make, Roy. I don't think you're suggesting that people walk around like Claude Van Damme.
No, not at all.
But walk around and exude the look of you're paying attention and you're aware. I mean, you can project that. And
you're aware and you have a sense of purpose about you.
Yeah.
People pick on that up. I mean, people do it all the time. Me and some of my friends that are in law enforcement, we'll go someplace and we're all retired now. So we don't have that clean cut look anymore. Longer hair and beards. And 9 out of 10 people peg us. You guys are cops. You guys are cops. Yeah. You're a cop. It's because you have the same thing where you can peg a guy that's ex-military. It's the confidence they show when they're walking. They're secure in themselves. They're secure in their own skin. And they're not, you know, out there beating their chest and, you know, walking all puffed and flexing. It's just they have an aura about them that shows confidence. And anybody can have that aura to show confidence. You just, like I said, be aware of your surroundings. Have a sense of purpose when you're walking. Be aware of your surroundings. You know, where's the exits? Where are the, you know, where are the staff coming from? Where's the closest restroom? People, criminals will pick up on if a person is observant or not observant, because this is the world they live in. They look for the meek. They look for the timid. They look for the people that have their heads buried in the book. You know, that's why a lot of these confrontations you see online, it's most of the time these people are getting caught and mugged. And if you look at the person's behavior before the crime takes place, these people are clueless. And then you have the other examples where you have a criminal come in and go to target one person. And all of a sudden there's a concealed carry in the crowd. And we've all seen those videos and see how that plays out. They weren't targeting this person, but you never know who's also there to back you up.
You mentioned concealed carry, and that is a great segue into an experience I've had several times. When I carry concealed, and quite honestly, that's a lot less frequently in Montana. I know I should get better at that. But in Washington, I carry it all the time.
Oh, gosh, me too.
Because, you know, there were insane drug addict freaks around every corner. And that's not the case here in our town of 2000 in Montana. But anyway, when I carried, it was not an act. It wasn't even a conscious thing I was doing. When I carried a gun, I carried myself differently. And it wasn't, you know, supreme confidence. It wasn't like, I'm going to kill people. It was unintentional. I could tell by people's reactions, they knew that I was calmly confident, sort of professional in a sense, and they would not mess with me when I was carrying. And it's a stark contrast. So, and I guess as a retired law enforcement, you can carry in your blue state of New York, believe it or not.
That's,
and so talk about the difference when you're carrying versus not carrying, because this could be another reason for people to get better at carrying, like I should, by the way.
Well, all right, going back to carry, I'm licensed to carry in all 50 states because of H.R. 218, which was a federal law passed many years ago. We just have to get certified, so any retired law enforcement officer that meets through the qualifications can carry their gun in all 50 states as long as they're certified under H.R. 218. When I carry, which is probably 90% of the time, I'm always aware that my firearm's on me. And that, I think, in my mind, gives me a little more ease because I know I'm armed. And I think that'll telegraph to the crowd, they don't know I'm armed, but it just brings my self-confidence level up a little bit. I know I'm ready for threats, perceived or not perceived, could be imaginary, but I know I am ready and prepared and I train with my firearm. So I think that could go for you also. Like when you said, when you were out in public in Washington and you carried your firearm, you had just a little bit more confidence about yourself, and it probably carried over into the way you walked, into the way you stood, you know, even unconscious things. I'm sure you belated your body when you were talking to people to keep your firearm out of reach from those persons. Even if they weren't a threat, you were doing these things subconsciously because you were probably trained to do that. And these are all signs that telegraph your state of preparedness.
Exactly. And here's another thing that I don't know people think about when it comes to how you carry yourself to deter criminals. Shelby is a very attractive woman. I think we all know that. No big surprises here. When I'm with her, especially, and by the way, Roy, your wife is stunning. Nice work, sir.
Thank you.
But
thank you very much.
When I'm with her, I think of it as a little bit of effort into walking confidently means that I'm going to deter people from saying anything about her, you know, usually drunk people or something. Again, this hasn't been a problem in Montana because everybody carries and you're out of your mind to be trash talking somebody. But in Washington, it was a problem. I can think of a couple specific examples. But I realized that by taking a little bit of time and energy to deter bad guys with my body language, I was saving myself from getting into scrapes because bad guys wouldn't say horrible things. And there's something about me because I'm a man. I mean, if you say something horrible to my wife, even though it may not be the best legal decision to make, we're going to get in an altercation. Maybe not a fist fight, but you're not getting away with it. Now, if there's seven of you, you know, sorry, Shelby, I'll see you later. No, I'm kidding. But I mean, you stay out of trouble. And I remember one time I was carrying, now to switch back to that other topic, I was carrying and a guy cut me off in a parking lot. And I thought to myself, I've got 15 rounds of 40 caliber on me. I could end you in 5 seconds. And I just kind of chuckled and I thought, okay, yeah, you win, sir. Go ahead and you have that spot. I wasn't going to get in a fist fight armed. And so you stay out of trouble by being confident and by being armed. Shelby.
So that's a great example of how
funny you said that.
Glenn goes back and forth between he'll go back and forth between a criminal mindset and a non-criminal mindset. But that's the example, though. Non-criminal mindset has filters. You stopped yourself from, anyway.
Yeah.
So Roy, what were you going to say?
Now, we were talking about the criminal mindset. They never turn theirs off. They are always, like us as preppers and law-abiding citizens and, you know, all around decent human beings with a good moral compass. You know, sometimes we slip, sometimes we are off point, and the criminals, they're not. They're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, looking for somebody's weakness or vulnerability. It's not like one day he's a nice guy, next day he's not. They always have the underlying motive that they want something of yours for free. And it could be anything. It could be just a robbery. It could be a sexual assault. It could be anything. They never stop. They are always on the lookout. Now, when something happens, like a natural disaster, when the emergency services are preoccupied with other things, they become more brazen and there's more incidents. And I've seen it over and over. I've seen it with hurricanes. I've seen it with blackouts. I've seen it with snowstorms. You name it. When emergency services are preoccupied dealing with something bigger, even the petty criminals step up their game to the next level.
So much to unpack there. One thing I wanted to mention was you mentioned when stuff goes bad, these people come out of the woodwork. There's a storyline in 299 Days, and this is based on stuff I heard from people like you who know what you're talking about, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but it's basically there's about 1% of the population that are complete sociopathic criminals. They'll kill you and peel your face off and never have any thought about it. These are hardcore folks that just need to be contained and kept out of society. There's about 3% of the population. I understand there's some debate on these percentage numbers, but there's about 3% of the population. They're what you consider like regular criminals. They would think, if I'm going to get caught, maybe I won't do this, but they're basically inclined to be criminals because it's all they know. And one thing people forget about criminals, it's what they do for a living. They sit around all day and they talk shop. It's like how to pick locks, how to pick victims. I mean, I've seen this in the courthouses when it's criminal docket and they're all waiting to go, you know, have their whatever preliminary hearing or something like that. They all sit around and they talk shop. It's unbelievable. Then there's the other 10 or some say 15% of the population that are opportunists. When stuff breaks down, they will take advantage of it. They don't have any moral inhibition. And a lot of these 10 to 15%ers can largely turn off their criminality and maybe work normal jobs. But by the way, they do criminal things that aren't like full-scale violent things. They're the ones that do insurance fraud. They do all these kind of petty scams. They offer things for sale online and then skip out once they get the money. So what do you think about this 1, 3, and 10 to 15% breakdown? Is that roughly true? Because preppers need to understand this, because most preppers, I'm guessing, live in a world in which there are 0% criminals around you. So you need to think about the 1, 3, and 10 to 15. What do you think, sir?
I think those numbers are low, honestly, in my opinion. But then I spent a lifetime around criminals, so I had more exposure to them, like every single day of my adult life. So my numbers might be skewed. I think the opportunists would be more like 20%, to be honest.
Yeah.
Especially with the, and I'm not bashing a younger generation, because there, I know a lot of wonderful, wonderful, you know, 20 to 30 year olds, but I've also seen them. They are so desensitized to life and life events because of what they've seen with social media and playing graphic video games and stuff that when I was young and you were young, we didn't hear about a rape that happened two states away because it wasn't in the local newspaper. It wasn't on the local news. The younger generation is exposed to stuff around the world, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So they're not shocked as we are when they hear that there was a rape or a murder, or to them, it's a fact of life. And I think that they've been desensitized to how horrible these things are, that when they're presented with an opportunity to, oh, the guy left $100 at the bar and went to the bathroom. Well, I'm leaving, so I'm going to snatch this $100 off the bar and leave. You know, this is not a criminal mastermind, but they don't see that it being so wrong. Ah, shame on that guy. And I see it in good kids, you know, oh, well, you know what? I can just, you know, I'll lift this or I'll take that. And, you know, shoplifting, you know, across America, I mean, it's almost a given. Like, you can do it. You're not going to get in trouble. So is it morally wrong? And this is the mindset that some of these people have.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. We have so much more to talk about. And we're just getting started with New York police officer Roy. So join us on the other side of the break for more.
More Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher is coming right up. Hear all our previous shows free online at prepping2-0.com. Without water, you're done in 3 days. Pro One Water Filters. It's literally a matter of life and wet. Pro One G2.0 all-in-one gravity systems are NSF ANSI 42 component certified.
Not everybody can say that.
No need for additional add-on filters to reduce fluoride. Pro One stainless gravity systems include a stainless steel spigot and a countertop stand for no additional cost. Pro One Water Filter Gravity Systems. Check them out at ProOneUSA.com. That's ProOne. USA.com. Most tested, most trusted.
Prepping 2.0 is about that next level of prepping. One of the key 2.0 items to have is bulletproof body armor plates. I used to think body armor was too tactical for a regular guy like me, but it isn't. Give yourself, your family, and your team an unfair advantage when bullets are flying. Body armor used to be expensive and hard to get. Not anymore. KD Armor, and that stands for Come and Take It, makes solid and affordable body armor for normal people. Get body armor while you can. The clowns in Congress are trying to prohibit future sales. KD Armor is the place to get it. CATIArmor.com. Prepping 2.0 listeners get a 10% discount when you use the coupon code GRANT.
When the grid goes down, darkness will descend fast. Used to be there was nothing you could do about an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, or CME, coronal mass ejection. Now you can protect your electronics, protect your family, thanks to EMP Shield. EMP Shield invented a simple-to-install device that prevents whatever's connected to it from frying in an EMP or CME, and it costs just a few $100s. EMP Shield has been tested by independent laboratories and passed muster with the government, which has ordered lots of them. Google EMP Shield and see for yourself. And save some money. Get a $50 discount per device. Go to prepping2-0.com. Click on the Friends and Affiliates page, then click on the EMP Shield logo. At checkout, use coupon code PREPPING2.0. It's all one word.
Shelby Gallagher here. We found that you need to layer your food preps.
Yeah, this is Glenn Tate here. A lot of times the hardest part of layering is the long-term foods. We love Numana foods, which have a 25-year shelf life and are non-GMO. Also, organic meals are available.
Numana comes in family-style portions and in bulk. This is not backpacking food. It's family meals that last for at least 25 years, the perfect freeze-dried part of your food layering.
You can get a sample of Numana meals for $19.95 and see for yourself. You will be amazed.
Prepping 2.0 listeners get a 10% discount by entering the code PREP.
Go to numana.com or click the link on the Prepping 2.0 website.
Give it a try. Numana.com. That is N-U-M-A-N-N-A.com.
Are you a prepper or homesteader looking to connect with like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own preparedness group? Already have a group? Well, look no further than PrepperNet. PrepperNet is dedicated to personal responsibility, individual freedoms, and being self-reliant. PrepperNet has monthly meetings in over 100 cities where you can meet and learn with like-minded people in your area. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Find us online at PrepperNet.com.
In a tactical situation, your AR is your life. Gibbs Arms makes a sweet feature, the only side charger that can use a standard bolt carrier group with no modification. Gibbs makes them in 9mm, 5.56, and 308. In fact, Gibbs Arms has been granted 8 patents for unique innovations. The company started back in 2008 when two Boeing engineers realized no one else made what they wanted. Take a look at their website and see all the ways Gibbs Arms can help you mod your AR. Gibbs with a Z, arms.com. That's GIBBZARMS.com.
Now, more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Thanks for rejoining us.
I'm back in the New York groove.
We are indeed back in the New York groove with NYPD Detective Roy. We're just getting started with our conversation with him, and for even more, including his take on human trafficking, stick around for the after show. If you're a Patreon supporter, I wanted to highlight Numana Foods, freeze-dried foods. We're going to be doing an episode coming up in a few about a war with China, China's invasion of Taiwan that's actually a little behind schedule right now. It's going to be happening soon, probably before Biden leaves office, because if you're going to start World War III, you would want to do it when your opponent's president is clearly cognitively impaired. But with a Chinese war comes massive disruptions. It'll be like the supply chain disruptions we had earlier on steroids. When that happens, you're going to want to have freeze-dried food. You're going to want to have that bulk anchor food that we call it that is in reserve. That's all that stuff. You're going to want that. Numana is the place to go. For that, numana.com, that's N-U-M-A-N-N-A.com. You can always look them up for a nice little discount, pretty sizable discount, at prepping2-0.com under Friends and Affiliates. The Archive Dive, this is where we go back and we look at previous archived episodes because we have so many new listeners every week that they may not know that we have done a bunch of stuff on a bunch of topics, and we encourage you to go back and listen to them. The Archive Dive this week, we're going to feature episode 73, which was called Welcoming New Preppers, Including Formerly Anti-Prepping Spouses. The title says it all. That aired in March 2020. Well, we'd like to resume with Roy. Roy, you've told me some amazing stories about when you were deployed as an International Guardsman for Hurricane Sandy. Why don't you tell some of the stories, specifically focusing on the citizens' attitudes in, and I'm going to generalize, a pretty unprepared place like the New York metro area. These stories are great. So just roll with it, my friend.
All right. Well, I'm going to say one thing real quick.
Sure.
I've been a prepper my whole adult life, and my wife has just recently got on board with my prepping.
Yay!
The sound of cheering.
For the longest time, and since COVID, she's been 100% supportive. She saw what was happening in the world. She's more, eyes are open to what's going on in the country and world politics. And now she questions me, all right, do we have this? Do we have that? How are we on this? And it is such a weight off my shoulders having a partner that is willing to prep with me. And that's all I'm saying on that.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Welcome
that is
aboard.
Fabulous. Yes. Welcome back, Mrs. Roy.
Well, during Hurricane Sandy, which was a pretty devastating storm here on Long Island. And one thing about Long Island, it's an island. It's 25 miles wide, 100 miles long, with only three bridges that you can physically leave the island to get to mainland New York or Connecticut, and then a couple ferry services. So when an event like that happens here, supplies aren't getting in. Infrastructure comes to a grinding halt, and it doesn't take long for people's attitudes to change very, very quickly. And speaking from experience, I was in the National Guard, and we were handing out emergency rations, MREs, and cases of water. And we had everyday housewives, you know, mild-mannered people, just losing their minds because they could only get a small allotment. They got one case of MREs, two cases of water, and if they could prove they had children, they would get a second case of MREs and a third case of water. And we had fistfights in line from architects and accountants and housewives and bankers because they all wanted more because they were not prepared. And, you know, it didn't take long to see the writing on the wall. And I was in the government trying to help them out that the government will not be there because our resources ran out quickly. We ran out within 4 days, and then there was no more free handouts. And it was about another week until they could start getting the trucks and the trains rolling to bring us in more supplies.
And people need to understand this. First of all, that's fantastic because you were there and you saw it. It's not as if, you know, you're a fiction writer and sort of hypothetically describing this stuff. You were there and you saw it. And what preppers really need to understand is you're going to be surrounded by people just like Roy is describing. And they're going to be mad. They're going to be greedy. I guess, I don't know if it's greedy to want to feed your kids. That's maybe just desperation, not greed. But still, these people are going to be freaked out. That's what you need to understand. And all the
That's it. It was desperation. It was desperation from, you know, people that live on your block that had maybe a few days worth of food in their house. They're used to doing Grubhubs and, you know, home deliveries or Peapod shopping where the grocery store delivers for them. They had no way to take care of themselves. Then you couple that with having a couple kids, your kids are hungry, desperation turns to anger, anger turns to violence in 2 days.
And not
and
only
these are from normal people.
And not only do you have the desperation that you're describing, the other factor that leads to violence is there are no cops around. There were guardsmen handing out MREs, and that's about it. I imagine you couldn't even have, you know, live ammo in your magazines, right? I mean, you guys were not a security force. You were a MRE and water distribution operation. And so when
people... Pretty much. We had armed people with us, but people didn't care. You know, when they're desperate, they don't care that the authorities are there. They wanted more. They wanted to take care of the family. And that's something as a prepper you have to be prepared for. Like, you're going to have people coming out of the woodwork. Oh, the guy two houses down who's a regular Joe, you know, maybe he knows you stock up on things. And when he hits the fan, he's like, he's not worried about himself because he knows, hey, Roy down the road has plenty. I'm just going to get some of his. And then when Roy says no, then Roy has to watch his back because neighbor Bob is trying to climb over his fence at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, and that brings up a good point. You have your experience when you were there as a guardsman, seeing what you saw. Imagine all the fisticuffs incidents that happened outside of your view and outside of law enforcement view. I mean, that's how nasty it's going to get, folks. And you got to make sure you win that fight, right?
Absolutely. Well, we heard stories of, you know, people leaving the parking lot and getting, you know, halfway down the block and, you know, people coming up. One incident was at gunpoint and made a whole line of cars that were stopped at a stoplight pop their trunks and they took everything that they were just given.
Wow. And that may work in a one-dimensional sense in a place like Long Island where a guy with a gun can rob all those people. I'll tell you, in Montana, you try that and you're dead. And so I think that having a disarmed population, largely disarmed, I know you can own guns in the state of New York, it's just really hard. But yeah, that situation only worked without people getting shot because of a disarmed population. Not that I'm for a disarmed population. I'm just saying, imagine how volatile it would be in any other setting where it's like, I see somebody with a gun stopping vehicles, especially if I have time to get one of the several firearms in my truck. And I see a gun and I see a felony. Those are the two items that I use as my personal criteria for using lethal force. And it's nighty night, amateur. That's how that's going to turn out.
Yep. And, you know, we were talking about prepping in general. I've had a lot more people come up to me over the past few years who have shown interest in prepping, and then people that I didn't even know were preppers have said, Roy, you know, I was talking to so-and-so and they say that you do this and this and this, and then they'll come out of the woodwork and they'll be like, well, I've been prepping for 15 years. So I think there's a lot of preppers out there that are just under the radar, not telling anybody, going about their normal business, and we're no longer a taboo. It's people used, like you used to tell somebody you were a prepper, they look at you like, you know, a conspiracy theory wearing a tin hat, and now they're coming up and asking for advice. Well, what should I do? What should I get? What should I stock up on? The whole outlook on prepping has done a 180. We're no longer the outcasts.
Oh, I love it.
And that's true in a blue state. Listen to what Roy just said, and in the accent in which he said it. He lives in ground zero of blue statism. And he's saying it's becoming more and more common. It's more acceptable. It's no longer a taboo. Think about that. That is a great sign, because that means there are going to be fewer people needing to carjack people. And there are going to be a lot more people who can take care of their kids. Especially, I'm going to highlight water. I got to tell you how important the water stuff is. But we've made that point numerous times. So good on you, America, for partially getting your stuff together. Good. Even in a place like Long Island, New York.
Well, and you just hit on something.
No, I do want to say something real quick.
Sure.
Even though New York is a blue state, the whole state's not blue.
Exactly.
80% of New York are Republicans. There are 5 or 6 counties in New York that have left the Democratic plague that we're dealing with. It's Albany County, Manhattan, Kings, Bronx, Brooklyn, Staten Island, and Yonkers, because they are the most densely populated counties in the state, and they carry the elections every single time. So you have a small geographical area that gets to put our elected officials in power. 90% of the elected officials out here on Long Island, in Suffolk, in Eastern Long Island, they're all Republicans. From our representatives, one of our congressmen, all of our local government. Very few liberals. There's a few Democrats, but they're not the progressive
AOCs.
Totally left. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. AOC. AOC's Manhattan. That's how she's elected. So the whole state's not bad. It's just certain areas.
Oh, absolutely. I want to.
And those are the areas that you'll stay away from, because it'll be utter chaos.
And we were in the exact same boat, Roy. And I think anyone who's living in a blue state feels the same way. We were living in a blue state way outside of Seattle. But talk to me about this a little bit, because we were the same way. We're like, we're not in the middle of that deep blue. But the problem was that we were starting to face is that the state legislature was deep blue And so things like, and you're seeing Washington State do this now, Oregon's done a couple of crazy things too, where they, I don't know, they decriminalized the use of fentanyl. I mean, just crazy stuff.
So see how while that works.
While you're like, well, I don't live in this city, it's not going to affect me. Oh, but they'll come out to the country and take your high capacity magazine. You know, the state policies eventually do start to creep in. And as a prepper, that can affect you. Can you add to that at all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, New York has become, I think we have some of the most stringent gun laws in America as far as the amount of rounds we can carry. Most people, you know, law enforcement and retired are exempt from a lot of these things. But they overnight, with the New York State SAFE Act, made millions of New Yorkers felons just because they have a large capacity magazine for a rifle. And on the same token, they were trying to do a if you wanted to keep your AR, which you bought legally before, you just had to register it with the state police and you'd be allowed to keep it. It was the largest case of civil disobedience, I think, in American history. They only had like 100,000 people in the state of New York register their firearms. Everybody else said, oh, sorry, lost it. It got stolen. It fell off the boat when I was fishing. People were not complying with the law, and the state police were so embarrassed by it, they never gave the stats out on who actually did or didn't. But it was, you know, everybody was like, no, I ain't doing it. Nope, nobody did it. Nobody turned in guns. Nobody turned in their magazines. Nobody turned in their bump stocks. Nobody, you know, it was just the average citizen in New York said, you've overstepped and we're not doing it. Mm-hmm.
So this is a great segue into probably our last topic in the regular show, which is, what's it like prepping in a blue state? So go ahead and describe what it's like prepping where you are.
Yeah, there's a different mindset here. Like I said, we're on an island that if we're to hit the fan, we are not bugging out. There is no place to bug out to. I am not going to travel through New York City to try to get to a retreat upstate New York or Pennsylvania someplace. It's not going to happen. So we have a bug in mindset. You have to have everything that you're going to need to survive at your primary residence. The second part of that is, if the shit hits the fan, I'm not leaving my residence. I have enough supplies to last me a very, very long time. I won't even poke my head out of my property till 60 days after the event. Let everybody else fight it out and I'll be just fine. And there'll be less people to deal with when I do resume my normal activities outside of my property. But as far as prepping, there's you know, we're very lucky here. There is you know, we live on an island, so we're surrounded by water. So part of our prepping is crab traps, fishing gear, tackle, stuff like that, because there's an abundance of shellfish and seafood that you could get for yourself. The other part of it is long-term supplies, like you were talking about, the 25-year long-term storage food. That is the bulk of my supplies, is all the easy to store, less space, and then, of course, it is water. And everybody has their own take. Some people have drilled wells. I have a well that I use just for irrigation, but it's perfectly fine for drinking. And that's how I got around the local laws about having a well. I have an acre of property and I say I use it for irrigation and my gardens, so I don't have to use the public water supply for that. So if I had to, I could always use that, use my Berkey to clean it, but it's perfectly fine groundwater. I could use that for everyday cooking.
Nice. Now tell us about, you mentioned the mindset is different in a blue state. How does that mindset affect how you prep? What are some countermeasures you have in place to keep yourself on the QT, basically?
Elaborate a little bit more on that so I make sure I'm following where you're going.
I'm thinking of the storyline from Shelby's books where she was prepping in Portland, and this is all based on a true story, as most of our two book series are. And she bought a Mossberg shotgun, and she didn't want to put the Mossberg gun box, it's gun boxes are very distinctive shape, especially when they say Mossberg on them in big letters. She didn't want to put that in the garbage because she didn't want her neighbors to know that she had a shotgun. And she didn't want all the homeless people who roam the area to know that she had a shotgun. So how do you mask what you're doing? Or maybe you don't. I'm just curious because it would seem to me that,
you know, basically, yeah. it's it's not in the open. We don't talk about it, you know. It's usually, you know, you have a good friend of yours that might know that you're a prepper, and then you know somebody else that's a prepper. You might find out that somebody else is prepping. But it's not everything I do. Like if I get a, you know, if I'm getting long-term food supplies and I'll pick it up at a FedEx facility where you can pick the stuff up, I won't unload it till late at night so nobody can see what I'm doing. I don't advertise that I have firearms. I don't, you know, like Shelby said, I would never put a box in the garbage that had Mossberg on it. You know, it's more of a sort of like a more of a resistance mindset where you want to fly under the radar. You're out there acting like an everyday person, but you're not. You are prepping and trying to make sure that you have everything you need to survive if and when something happens.
Well, tell us about networks. You've mentioned, you know, some people, they may know that you prep and you sort of go through that speakeasy thing where it's like you have, we have code words. I called it in 299 days, the conversation, capital T, capital C. It was the conversation you had with people. Tell us about networks. I mean, are preppers networking in areas like Long Island?
Well, actually, we have been lately. There's a few of us that have gotten together and talked at length over a couple beers in the backyard. And we also had some discussions about mutual assistance if it should ever be needed. And then we've also figured out ways of alternate communications if needed. And these are this about four people that live within a half mile of me.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that networks are even more important when you live in a blue area because the general population is so underprepared. You have to be extra on top of your game, and the best way to be extra on top of your game is to have some backup, right?
Yeah, and there's also been talks of, you know, okay, who has the biggest house or who has the best setup for security if it got to that point where we would then all combine to one location instead of being five locations spread out over a half mile. There's a lot more thought and planning into what we have to do here on this island to ensure safety than I guess you would if you owned, you know, 50 acres in Montana.
Yeah. Well, what are some tips you would have for blue state preppers? Because a large part of our audience live in cities, which are typically in blue areas, and we always go out of our way to make sure we're not saying, well, the 50-acre spread you have in Montana, that's your starting point. And if you have that, then here's how you prep, because most people don't have that. We don't even have 50 acres. So what are some tips for urban / blue area preppers? It sounds like you've lived it and you've done it and you've done it well. So what can you pass on to the listeners?
The biggest thing I'd say, just find like-minded individuals and you'll find them. You just have to look for them. And, you know, they used to send out some cues, or, you know, I found one guy that was a prepper just because he knew I was a retired officer, and he's like, oh, you like firearms. He started talking about firearms, and I started talking about his firearms. And then he, you know, we got into a conversation. I said, oh, you sound like somebody that might prep. And he's like, well, I do. It was just all about trying to get that small talk in there to find out maybe a little bit more about the person. You'd be surprised. Your neighbor could be a prepper. I had a guy move next door to me a few years ago. He's got more preps than I do. And I didn't know about that for the first 3 years he lived next to me. And then we just, you know, he looked, and it all started over the conversation we had that I got chickens. So I have my little acre of property here in Long Island, and I built a coop and I got the chicks and was raising them. And he's like, oh, you got chickens. I'm like, yeah. And he's like, why'd you get chickens? You know? And I'm like, well, you know, I like to hedge my bets in case there's, you know, ever an emergency. And then that just opened the door right there to him and me becoming friends and sharing a lot of like-minded interest and mindset.
I love how you approach that. We've done shows in the past where we've talked about this topic of networking, and we've said, don't walk up to someone and say, hey, I think the world's going to end tomorrow, and I need to find a case of hand grenades. Where can I get them? You know what I mean? Don't be an idiot, and don't bowl people over. It's a subtle thing. And here's the thing that's frustrating for a lot of preppers is this thing we're talking about, this process of finding others, takes a little bit of time and takes a little bit of energy. It's not going onto Amazon and hitting the buy it now button and getting, you know, a bunch of water treatment pills, which you should do, but it takes a little bit of time and effort. And it's also something that is more geared towards people who are either extroverts or are neutral. It's hard for introverts to strike up conversations, and we get that and we respect that, and we're not asking you to change your personality. It's just, you got to make the effort. And I think the way you describe doing it is really the way to go. It sounds like it's been effective for you.
It has. It has been. And, you know, like I said, you might find like-minded people wherever you go, in your local church, or if you go to a gun range, or even at some places like Tractor Supply. You know, exactly. I mean, people are going to these places for the same reasons you are.
So we only have a couple of minutes here, Roy. I wanted to just kind of wrap this up a little bit with this question. You have a couple minutes. We realized when we moved here to more rural, less populated, more conservative, definitely more conservative area where we don't have to just always be on alert. It's okay if I put a Mossberg box in my trash dumpster because my neighbor has two of them actually, you know, so it's interesting. When we first moved here, we had preppers reaching out to us going, yeah, it's no big deal. This is how America lives. This is what it's like in the country.
This is normal, right?
This, right. And I'm like, no, you don't understand what it's like to live in a place like New York, like Chicago, like Portland, like Seattle, where you have these opportunists that they outnumber you, and it's a lawless area where you are your first responder. So you have a couple minutes. Can you help just, you know, describe that even more and how it's so different in different places like that?
Well, I think it has to do in New York or in a blue state. I really think a lot of it has to do with fear or my insecurity with going, you know, speaking about it in public. You know, it's like I don't want to bring attention to myself, but I also don't want to have people going, oh, you know, he's the weirdo that lives over there down the block and he's a prepper. You know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, your mindset about it. But like I said, and around here, it's not an open conversation. It's not stuff we talk about, you know, sitting at the local tavern or the local bar. It's hushed backyard conversations when you finally find somebody that's like-minded.
Exactly. Exactly. So we are going to take this into the after show. We're going to talk with Officer.
Detective.
Oh my gosh.
I know he doesn't care, but I do. I'm all about formalities.
Detective Roy. He doesn't care.
Detective Roy.
We're going to talk to him because, as you know, I'm watching and listening to the headlines, and you know that human trafficking is a big deal right now. It's huge, and we're going to get his take on that.
Some solid tips on how to prevent this from happening.
How to prevent it.
Your family.
Absolutely. So, folks, don't go away. And if you're not a Patreon, think about joining us. And you can find that Patreon button over at our website, prepping2-0.com. But, folks, like always, from our amazing founding father, Benjamin Franklin, failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a great week, everyone.
Adios.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher. All the information you've heard today, including all our previous shows, is online at prepping2-0.com. Find out more about Glenn's books at 299days.com and Shelby's books at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.